Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Inside the Mix podcast. If you are a returning listener, a big welcome back. And if you are a new listener or viewer on YouTube, don't forget to hit subscribe and also that notification bell so you get notified whenever we go live. This is an episode of the Legendary Producers Pub, which is proving extremely popular since its inception earlier in the year. And it is live on YouTube, and it should also be live in the Facebook group as well. It is now live because I've had to say yes. Facebook, you actually have to tell it to go live, which is a pain. Anyway, I digress. So today we have, I think everybody's been on before, which is brilliant. So we've got Pishang, we've got Subneon, we've got Tota, we've got R9, and we have Neon Highway, who is sporting a new mug. And it is a Inside the Mix podcast mug, which he won in this second giveaway. So if you do follow the podcast on YouTube, yeah, you should do that. On Instagram, you'll see that I frequently run competitions whereby you can win shit. And he's won a mug. The next one's going to be a t-shirt. So keep an eye out for that. So if you've never listened to the podcast before or this particular format, this is an episode of the Producers Pub whereby each artist has submitted music, 30 seconds, we listen to it and then offer feedback on it. And that is the sort of process of this episode. So the first one is Neon Highway. So if you can give us a little bit of background about this track that we're about to listen to.
So the background to this track is that we've all done, Synthwave has done all the classics. It's done The Breakfast Club, it's done Knight Rider, it's done all those guys. And one of the forgotten heroes of the 80s is Street Hawk and Jesse Mack and his motorbike and, what, 1983, 1984. So I loved Street Hawk when I was a kid. I loved it, absolutely loved it. So I wanted to do something that was absolutely retro, something that is just like harking back to that before even the mid-80s, you know, and just capturing that Street Hawk ethic. So this is pretty much the start of a demo for what I'm going to call Street Hawk.
Lovely stuff. And for the audience listening, you released a song just 2 or 3 days ago, if I'm not incorrect. Yeah, it is fantastic. So do go and check that out. Follow, as with everybody on this podcast, do go check that out. Anyway, I digress. Here we go. Neon Highway. Fantastic stuff. I really like that, mate. I think that's a great start. What synths do you use out of interest for that sort of rising high synth melody line you have in there?
I think that might be UHE Tyrell.
Okay. Yeah, I really like that. I think that sounds nice.
It's really good. Is it Valkyria synth? She put me onto this probably about a year ago, and the minute she put me onto it, I had a demo on the go, and I thought, you know what, this is amazing, this is the sound that I need. But it's an amazing synth, it's quite limited, but it's got some great little tunes, and if you just play about hitting the notes and seeing what the sounds produce, there's some cool stuff in there. I think it's mainly a mix of Diva and UHE Tyrell.
I think limitations are good. Yeah. You mentioned that when you have a synth, then there are limitations to it. Otherwise, you can just get lost in the abundance of patches and various different parameters that you can tweak.
Yeah.
And sometimes I find limitations, specifically with songwriting, if I'm limited to like two or three soundscapes or synths or something along those lines, I can quickly knock out a tune so much quicker rather than scrolling through and then just finding out I don't actually use anything that I've just looked at. But I think that sounds cool, mate. The bass in it, do you only use synthesized bass, right? Not actual bass guitar?
Yeah, just synths, mate. All the way.
So I really like to hear like your tunes with actual bass guitar in it, mate. Like bass pumping in the background there.
Really interesting, actually, because when I was writing this one, you don't really hear it playing here, and it's probably the mix that I've got, but at the end of the phrasing, there's this really kind of cool I imagine if it was on a real bass, it's jumping around the fretboard and sort of rising up again. I need to kind of do more with that, but maybe the solution to that is getting a real bass player.
As a team bass player girl, I have to say, I just got myself a bass player to play bass guitar instead of synthesized bass, which I usually use for my live gigs, and it gives it such a fucking power. I feel like I missed out on it all. Now when I listen back to my tunes, I'm like, oh, I could have been a rock star. Yeah. Here I am trying to be all synthy. It gives it some cool like punch, a little more aggression, just because you hear that.
Real bass.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like it. But this was fab as it is, I will say.
You just need to get a good one, don't you? That's the problem. If you get a good bass player, it can be wonderful for these things.
You can play guitar phenomenally. I reckon you could give me a bass part. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I can play bass. I'll do the bass part.
Just got to pump those root notes.
Bass a lot on lots of things, but just not particularly on my own tunes. Like, because I don't sort of... I've never really thought of synthwave as having sort of real bass on it, so...
I think I would ask Sub Neon to do the bass for it, but I'm going to get 12 different bass parts back, and I don't know what to do with that. The guy's a legend. He is the synth bass king.
You play bass as well, don't you, Sub?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, bass and guitar, badly. Yeah. But, mainly slapping. Yeah. Because
he's got 12 hands, he plays 12 basses at once.
and the bass.
That's how the utmost respect for Sub Neon's basses, they are incredible.
I use bass, actual bass on all my songs. But then again, I'm not like essentially synth wave. My stuff sort of morphs and goes in other directions. But I like Tota was saying, I find as soon as I put actual bass guitar on it, and the guy I get to play bass is a really good bassist. He's like Steve Harris, like doing all that shit. And it just, it just brings it, takes it to another level, I find. But it really depends on the song. Some songs don't need it, you know. But I'd be interested to know, just the bass pumping in the...
I think that's the way forward, I think that's the next addition to the track once I kind of start writing properly. Does anyone remember Street Hawk?
I do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, not as much as I want to, because I wasn't actually alive when it came out, shockingly, but... I do remember watching a bit of it.
I always remember being, had A-Team, Airwolf, Knight Rider, and always thought that Street Hawk was the fourth one out of those lot, but it only had one season, so it was clearly crap, and I remember it much better than what it actually was.
You look back with like nostalgia and you think it's a lot better than it actually is purely because it was in the 80s. I think that's what a lot of it is. You think, oh, it's in the 80s. It was great. And if you watch it in the 80s, as you put yourself in that situation, you'd probably be thinking, actually, this is quite shit.
I think having stuff like that, though, Street Hawk, I mean, seriously, I think having something like that as the motivation for writing the track, it's like I'm watching loads of Street Hawk trailers and clips from the show and I'm like, I'm feel motivated. I'm like, I need to do something where the motorbike's going really fast and jumping 30 feet in the air and shooting sharks, and you know, it's kind of that energy and that motivation. And by the end of it, I'll have a track that has absolutely nothing to do with Street Hawk, and I'll call it Street Hawk, and it'll have a motorbike helmet in the cover
And a shark.
And as synthwave often is, people look on it and go, oh, I remember that, and that's a bit of nostalgia, you know. Oh, there's a wee sunset floating in the background, and suddenly I feel all happy and fuzzy and all that kind of stuff. So that's what it's about.
I didn't know Street Hawk, but no bullshit, when I was listening to the song, I felt the motorcycle vibes. I was like, yes, this is a motorcycle tune. It's definitely for just long roads. So awesome. You definitely caught a vibe that somehow translated to...
Well, Street Hawk was the ultimate high-tech crime fighter. I remember that part.
Need to write one for Chips. Do you remember that? It's about two guys who just sat around like on a motorcycle all the time, but it wasn't very like dynamic. But yeah, Chips.
Yeah, I believe the Street Hawk motorcycle was supposed to go at 300 miles an hour. And you're just like, nope. Maybe that's why it only lasted one season. They were like, the guy just went too fast. He outrun all his seasons in one go.
Cool. Neon Highway, thank you very much. I think in the interest of time, I love these nostalgia trips. It's great. I often find with the podcast, it never usually sticks to its script. And I always do that with interviews. So moving on to the next one. So we have Tota. What have we got?
I love how spicily you're pronouncing my name. Dotta. Dotta. Yeah. I don't know why I've been upgraded to Dotta, but I like it. I'll go with it. So this is a piece of my latest single. It's just a couple weeks old right now, I think. And I basically wanted to create something with a lot more drive and more punch. And I'm coming out of having made a very vaporwave-esque cinematic type album and started doing more live shows. And I wanted to create something where I was like, oh, this is going to make people fucking dance. This is something that's going to bring a lot of energy on stage. So a higher BPM, more drive, and then not being afraid to mix influences, kind of.
Cool. Excellent stuff. Let's give it a go. Here we go. Just to get a taste of you, I'm hungry like a wolf. You got me losing my mind. You got me mesmerized. I'm hooked, can't stop feeling of your love. I need your love. That's really cool. There's a vocal hook in there, and it reminds me of a song.
Last night,
I cannot think of what song
life.
Is that.
Just Saved My Life. Yeah.
That yep. reminds
me. That is the one.
Yes, that's it.
You've been influenced. Yeah.
Oh, God. Have I ripped something off completely?
No, it's good because. Yeah, exactly. Multiple influences. But that's what I could hear. And I was picking up on that. I was like, oh, man, I'm loving this. And I can hear how bass guitar would sound good on this as well, like actual bass.
Yeah. Oh,
really
it does live.
That sound. Yeah,
it really it lifts it, in my opinion. I wanted like that little disco choir coming in with that cheesy the line that was apparently from something else that you recognised. It was specifically me wanting to be like, oh, how can I make it sound a little more disco? This like super high falsetto little cheesy one-liners. Can't stop the feeling of your love. Like,
I think it sounds great. I love that. I picked up on it straight away.
Wait, was that a kind of gated effect on the vocal? That was amazing.
Yeah, I really have to give that to my the audio engineer, because after having recorded it, we'd mixed it and gotten it to a point where it was kind of done. I was like, it's not feeling electronic enough. It's not feeling clubby enough with just this really long belty "I need your love" chorus that I was singing out. And I was like, can you just kind of chop it somehow? And we literally just twisted the dial one step and it ended up in the pattern of yes,
love it.
It's immediately the kind of retro stuff like that I wanted.
We'll be right back.
So I've got a hunch about a common struggle we all face: mastering. If you're an independent artist or music producer, you've probably encountered the frustration of masters that just don't hit the mark, right? They lack balance and refuse to play nicely across different devices and environments. Ever found yourself wondering, why don't my masters sound like my references? Perhaps you've spent countless hours attempting to master your tracks only to be unsatisfied with the results. Maybe you've tried every silver bullet plugin or even dabbled in AI. Or perhaps you're already working with an engineer but you're eager to explore different possibilities. Well, here's the solution you've been searching for: Synth Music Mastering. I'm offering a game-changing opportunity with a one-time free test master for a limited time. Picture elevating your music with my unwavering commitment to quality and a personalized touch that you just don't get with the big mastering studios. The best part, it won't cost you a penny. Just submit your finished mix and let's see how we can transform your music together. Don't let mastering be a mystery any longer. Say goodbye to the frustration and step into a world of sonic excellence. Grab your free test master now. Click the link in the episode description or head over to synthmusicmastering.com.
It was a lot of fun. It even has a bit of like an early mid-90s dance, like techno vibe to it, right? Like, I was definitely wanting to do this a little bit when I was listening to it.
For sure, I was trying to pull it a bit out of the 80s, but then keep that kind of typical synthwave. Just a pulsating bass to kind of anchor it in the synthwavy vibe.
I like that 80s, 90s crossover thing, though, and that club energy, but like, you know, I think you've definitely hit that dance floor thing, but it's still got good songwriting underneath it, I can tell. You know, there was a bit of a hungry like the wolf comment in the lyrics there, which might have been somewhat Duran Duran-esque, but you know, yeah.
That I think I changed it hungry like right. a wolf.
Okay. Yes. Isn't it hungry there you like go. No wolf? Copyright infringement.
Yeah, I was specifically like, oh, is this too close? Nah, I'll be good.
I don't know why wolves are so hungry, but that's the question.
Yeah, they hunt in packs, don't they? So you think that...
There we go. Yeah. It's just a problem.
You think yeah. that they'd have a... Yeah. If they're hunting in
be
packs...
Be quite successful.
They, yeah, exactly. They'd be successful in their hunts. not when you don't get the lone wolf. I think that's a myth.
The sigma
really?
Male.
Well, yeah, you don't get them around here and watch it.
I just don't think we get wolves... We don't get wolves in this country, do we? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, we don't get wolves, no. We don't get wolves.
So, R9, what have we got? What are we going to listen to? I haven't heard this yet.
Well, I mean, I could give you all this bullshit about it, but I just wrote it a few minutes ago before you came on air because I needed something to talk about. That's really the bottom line of it. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just sort of put together something and it's got a bit of Kraftwerk, I reckon, influence in there. It's got a bit of maybe Floyd influence in there, but like I think I could head off into a bit more guitarness in this. It's only got one chord in it so far, so I wouldn't call that a guitar epic yet, but like it's my sort of synth wavy something. I don't know, I hope it might turn into something, but at the moment it's a bit of a sort of 16 bar masterpiece, but you know, it's something to listen to, so you can all pick it apart and tell me.
I love the idea of like prog Kraftwerk. I'd love to know what that sounds like, some sort of prog based Kraftwerk. But here we go. So just a fairness, guys, I'll have to stop it there. But when I was listening to that originally, it kind of
there was the Kraftwerk.
Yeah, the sounds that you've got there and the composition, I can imagine it at like, I don't know if any of you have watched the series called Bones, a US series, but it's something like that where they're going out to view a crime scene in the mid-noughties. And they're just venturing up on a crime scene. That's what I can hear with that first bit there. But then when that jangly guitar comes in,
oh, it's good.
That guitar reminds me of another track. I can't think of what it is. This is terrible. Yeah, but there's something. There's another track as well, and it was really. I'm gonna have to listen to it again after the show.
I think it might be another brick in the wall as well. But like you know,
yeah.
But
I like when that guitar comes in. I really like that, and it's gonna bug me the song I'm thinking of because. I'm not going to die. I'll spend the next hour trying to think of it, but I think it sounds good, mate. I think I can definitely hear the Kraftwerk element of it. Obviously, it needs fleshing out, as you say, because it's only just started, but yeah.
Yeah, it needs some. Yeah, he's literally just trying to come up with something, but I think it's got merit. But you tell me, that's what you're all here for.
Yeah. Well, what's that bass sound, Tim? What's that? Yeah.
The bass sounds a bit of a mixture of a Jupiter 8 kind of... there's a kind of Kontakt version of Super 8, I think it's called, which is their Jupiter 8 kind of thing. And then there's the Korg Poly 800, of course, the Korg Polysynth on top as well, like the classic synthwave thing. So I mix the two of them. I do that a lot, actually, mix the Korg with like something like either an Oppenheimer or a Jupiter 8 or something like that. It's just something that's got a bit more colour to it, and you know, it works better with the mob wheel and the filter and gives you a bit of colour, and then sort of mix that. So the band is actually playing the same notes, but you know, they're just like one's got a bit more that solidity that I think you get out of the Korg, and then the kind of colour that you get out of the other one, so, or the filter. So I like the two. Yeah.
How long did it take you to produce end to end, would you say?
About an hour.
How jealous are you, Matt?
Really, really jealous.
Me too.
That's about 4 weeks worth of work for me to get to that stage.
So the key question here, Tim, is this. Like, you spent an hour on it. What did you focus? I say focus. Focus might be the wrong word, but how did you sort of like, did you already have the sounds mapped out that you wanted to use? Or do you just have like a template and just went, all right, there's my synth, there's my drums, there's my lead. Bam, 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 bam.
No, I really started from scratch completely. So I just like was just sort of, I kind of guess I sort of put a fairly straight rhythm together and then went back onto that straight rhythm and sort of added some things later once I got something. But, you know, got a bass line up and then got some chords going for a few pads. And, you know, I often write in a sort of 8-16 bar sort of thing and put lots of ideas in and then start to arrange it quite quickly and then go back and go, oh, what does it need? I think the difficult bit was coming up with a little lead, that lead sort of craftworky lead thing that comes in at the end there. That was hard to kind of get the idea for that, you know. And I might need to. I mean, the thing is, I often write things quite quickly, but that doesn't mean that they're all done and produced. And that bit takes forever while I decide whether I like the snare for like the next 4 weeks. So it's not quick. It's not at all quick in that way. But, you know, I just pick it apart now. I mean, sometimes I think I shouldn't, and I should just go with my vibe and just keep running with it and have it all done and then be on to the next track. But, like, you know, I don't tend to be like that. So, yeah. And sometimes you do lose something of that. I don't know whether everyone else thinks this, but that is the problem, isn't it? Of keeping that initial energy and vibe that you're when you're writing something and then sort of still loving that track as much when you finished it and not having lost that initial energy and vibe while you're trying to get it perfect with the production, which is you get nailed. You get sort of so focused on that that you actually begin to hate the track, lose half the, you know, initial sort of bits that you liked or something, you know, lose the sort of vibrancy of it. So it's hard. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe it will turn into something. Yeah.
I'm my own number one fan on Spotify. I actually love my own music. I got my Spotify Wrapped last year, and you're like, here's your number one fan, and it was my fucking own account. I couldn't post it on Instagram. I like my own music. I don't just make music because it's like, I don't know. I don't get sick of a track. If I get sick of a track halfway through, I just can it. I only produce music and release music I actually like and actually want to listen to a whole bunch after it's out. Sometimes to critique the mix like we all do, but sometimes just because I want to listen to the fucking song. It's a little depressing sometimes because the track I just released a couple days ago with Demi K has already passed up my favorite track from my Void LP like that I released a year ago in Total Place. And it took like less than 48 hours. I'm really proud, but I'm really disappointed at myself for the Void LP at the same time.
I think going back to what you said there, Pashao, I think you've got like your own music though, haven't you? If you're releasing it, I mean, you've got to be able to listen to it. This would be an interesting question. Has anybody released music semi recently, like in the last couple of years, that they're thinking, actually, I wish I hadn't released that? You don't have to name the track if you don't really want to, but has anyone? Yeah, I mean, I've probably got a song or two that I wish I could go back and rethink. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I kind of like my, not mistakes, not even regrets. It's more like growing pains, or I guess a sign that my style fucking changes and that my mood changes. Because I did very much like the song that I wrote and released when it was released. It's just that now I guess my ears are different listening back to it. But yeah, I find it difficult as well to how much do I hold on to an original idea versus how much do I let myself polish it and strive for some sort of perfection? Because I have a tendency to fall in love with my demos as I'm trying to find a new shape for it or a new sound. Or like you say, I'm looking for the perfect snare sound. I'll realize that I'll be listening to my demo version for a month straight, and now everything sounds wrong that isn't the fucking demo version. So I'm kind of stuck being like in a Stockholm Syndrome type of situation where I'm in love with the hostage of my demo, but I'm trying to elevate it.
That sounds like an album.
So it's
I'm in
tricky.
Love with the hostage of my demo. I like that. It's good. But I mean, it's really, it's a quite a well-known thing that some very, you know, big artists will say that they, you know, they do a demo version on some four track or whatever, like, you know, if we're looking back in time, and they fall in love with some sound on that, which they then spend, you know, stupid amounts of time in studios trying to recreate. And it end up like, you know, it can be really hard because they can't release the demo, but they've got something on that demo that is really hard to, like, you know, end up with in the final thing. And I think that's a, that's part of it, is a, the skill or the battle is to try and, you know, keep your things fresh and keep them, you know, there's kind of things that you do by mistake. Don't, like, over just say, oh no, that's terrible, I must get rid of that. It's sometimes you've got to hold on to things that have got something interesting in them, and not overthink it and, like, change everything and over-sanitize everything. But it's really hard, yeah. Well, it's my battle anyway.
Sub Neon, what are we going to be listening to next?
Oh, I'm not sure how to describe this other than a bit of a mess at the minute. I bounced this probably an hour and a half before we went on air. And if you'll remember, I'd sent a previous version yesterday, and then I decided I didn't like it overnight. It's one of those ones that's kind of the opposite of Tim's workflow. I kind of build it up and then I start falling out of love with certain elements, and I want to change things around, and then it loses its kind of magic along the way. So I've fought my way through this thing this afternoon to get to the stage of where it is. It's absolutely nowhere near where I want it to be. It's got kind of three sections in it at the moment, and I would appreciate your thoughts. It only has eight basses, so I haven't gone over the top this time. Sinister. So...
It's very restrained of you, Sub Neon. So
you've got to take it easy.
Well, this is it. Yeah, it's the summertime and all that. Here we go. Cool, man. My initial thought was, when it was playing, around 25 seconds, I was thinking I could do with it, like, stopping or, like, dropping out slightly. And then it came in at 30 seconds. So it sort of answered what I was going to say. But that's what I was expecting to hear there after that, was, like, it to drop out and then come back in. I think a change of tempo would be good as well in that. But do you ever think, because you mentioned there about your songwriting and you get to the point whereby you have all these different things going on. I don't know if anyone else experiences this, but when you throw stuff at a track, you keep throwing bits and pieces at it, like a demo, and then it gets to the point whereby you just lose sight of it altogether. I've done that before, where I've had, like, track upon track upon track upon track upon track, and you keep adding to it and then trying to make it better, and then it just doesn't go. I don't know. I used to suffer from that quite a lot. I remember one track I was mixing, there was like 48-50 different tracks in it, and I was like, this is crazy.
Wait, is that a lie?
For me it was. My latest stuff, I've got about 25 tracks, if that, I think. I think Tolta mentioned this a while back, which was about going through your tracks and then getting rid of, like, killing your darlings, I think you called it.
Exactly.
And getting rid of those elements that just aren't contributing. And I've been doing that since, and it's greatly brought that track count down. I've gone off on a, on off on a tangent here a bit. This is based off what you said before the song, but yeah, my thought was space, and it came in. So there we go. Yeah.
I thought the demo clip was over, and he was just like being really classy, letting it echo out, and then it came back, and I was shocked.
Yeah, I was the same. I thought that it was really cool, man. Really cool. Some great sounds.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. The texture play between the different sounds that you use was like a almost visual when you listen to it. The amount of difference that you're playing with, and the all the rhythm switch-ups as a drummer, I was like, yes. Such an exciting track and so satisfying when a little groove kicked in with the bass line towards the end. Just, an absolute like a roller coaster of excitement. I definitely think you should keep
all of it.
Keep doing whatever you're doing, even if it's painful. Just like drag this out for 7 minutes and I'll be listening to it.
My feeling would be that you've got exactly what Toast said, that like that's really all going on in the tracks, which is excellent. And I've, to be honest, I think it's going on in, you know, there's some things that are going on in all of your tracks, like some similar sort of, you know, things that you're interested in, like that really captivate you, that make you want to write music, and they're coming out, and your style is coming out in your tracks. And a lot of that's rhythm, and like, you know, you've got a lot more going on rhythmically than maybe some synthwave tracks have, and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I think sometimes it's just knowing how much to put in. And so it is that thing that Mark was saying. Sometimes it's just like, do I need that extra bass on this one, or can I make this really punch through and be really powerful without bass number 7? You know, like 6.5 was enough. You just sort of find like that you just balance things up, and less is more when you still keep what you're trying to achieve in there, you know. And then I'm not saying you want to stop trying to achieve what you're trying to achieve. That's the point, you know. I'm not saying dumb it down in any way, but like at the same time, yeah, I think you might, the real struggle is to manage to make it as powerful and as, you know, energetic and as interesting and have all those textures, but maybe just shed out the sort of bits that aren't necessary, which there probably are some at times. Find it, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I write, I add in a track or a synth sound, and then I play it for a bit, and then I don't like it, then I mute it, then I bring in another track and then change the preset, but I leave it there just in case I might want to go back to it. And then I'll turn it on again and I'll say, oh, that sounds quite nice together. So then, you know, and it keeps kind of layering up like that. And I've got too much stuff going on in there. Listening back to it now, after the drop, and it comes in with that big baby hands in the air kind of synth, it's so much cleaner, and there's only two basses playing there. So, you know,
That bit does feel cleaner,
But also, what you do really amazing as well is, and Russell, I actually think Russell Nash is very good at this, within about 3 seconds of any of your tracks starting, you can say, that's a sub-neon track, like, instantly. And that's an amazing thing to have, like, amazing to have a signature sound. I think you have that, Russell Nash definitely has it, in that very retro sound, and Clintone has it as well. The minute a Clintone track starts, you're like, that's Clintone, you know. And so I think, you know, it's trying to balance getting the track right, but also being, do you know what, I'm fucking sub-neon and I'm going to make this sound exactly like sub-neon, because you're the only guy that's doing that.
I was just going to say kind of the same thing. Like, I think it's really interesting to see how anytime anybody who hasn't heard sub-neon hears sub-neon for the first time, they're just like, holy shit, that's good. Like, every single time it happens, somebody's introduced to sub-neon, they're just like, wow, this is synthwave, this is so much different, but it's so good. And I have the same, every time he sends me a track to listen to, I'm just like, yeah, that's sub-neon. This guy is on another level, man. So, that being said,
I think it's actually just the limitation of my knowledge of the synth.
creative limitation is a good thing. I think Mark said that at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah. I did. Yeah, I think limitation is good, man. I think one way to describe your music is like immersive, and this goes back to what Tota was saying earlier. It's like you listen to it, and it is very immersive. I think if you were to, you should consider this. It's getting like a Dolby Atmos mix of your tunes and see what it sounds like. Because I can imagine if you were to do that, it would sound incredibly immersive, as it would do because it's Dolby Atmos. But I think it would sound amazing. I mean, money is, it's easy for me to say that. Go and find a Dolby Atmos mixer and get it mixed in Dolby Atmos. But I would do it, man. I just to see what it sounds like, because I think it would sound incredible. And then, yeah.
I'll bear that in mind when I get over a certain number of streams, maybe.
When we say immersive, don't try listening to it in a submarine.
No. There we go. Oh, dear.
I'll tell you what, though, I have to say, I can't speak highly enough of these headphones, these VSXs. I'm not on the payroll, by the way, but it really does make a big difference in
you're gonna make me go
being
buy
able to
some,
pick out the different sort of areas of mud.
Stephen
stuff,
Slate is busy writing the check as we speak.
He does, I should get some, we should get some sort of like affiliate linking.
Yeah. No, I've been mastering your stuff, and I could tell straight away when you sent me mixes, like it was just like a whole load of stuff had really cleaned up, and the lower mid sort of range, really, really big difference. So they must be good. And then I just mastered it on my crappy speakers and it sounded all right. So there we go.
Brilliant. Thank you, Seb Neon. Fantastic stuff. So final one, Pashang, what have we got?
So this is a track that was supposed to end up going into my Shredwave EP that I'm releasing as soon as Russell and Typhurion finish their guitar parts, assuming they do. Typhurion, I can't wait. I haven't heard his stuff yet, but I know it's going to be amazing. It's going to be insane. And I've been jamming live with Russell over Discord, and oh my gosh, the dude has so much talent. He's so self-deprecating, but he's so freaking good at guitar. It's insane. Anyway, I digress, as one does on this show. I have a bunch of extra tracks that I wanted to put in the EP, but then I thought, you know, maybe I don't want to put guitars in all of these, or, you know, I had this whole story that I came up with, and Dimmy K kind of smacked me on the back of the head and said, hey, idiot, that's what people want to read. They want to get that context to the music, so why don't you actually write that out? So I did, and then it ended up inspiring me to write a whole bunch of other songs with little, like Tales from the Resistance, which I think is going to be the title of the EP. It'll be a follow-up to the Shredwave EP, but not necessarily all guitar stuff. And this one is a track called The Evolution Chamber, where the evil robot overlords are stripping the flesh from their, you know, hapless victims and remaking them in their own image to join the Infinite Legion. It actually features, at this point in time, and hopefully he'll let me keep it, some really good voiceovers from Sub Neon as the evil robot torture master. But we didn't do that part.
Right, yeah. Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah, that was at the weekend, time, you know.
He's a man of many talents.
You got to hear it. I was gonna leave it in there because it's right after the clip cuts off is when he starts talking. And I was just going to say, fuck the rules. I'm letting y'all hear Sub Neon's cool evil robot torture master voice. But it didn't fit.
Oh, you should have left it in there.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so good. I sent him the script, and I was like, I'll see what he does. And then he did such a good job. I was like, hey, do you want to just collab on this? And now I think we might actually release it as his first collab. No pressure, but, you know, now it's out there on the internet. You know, it's been said. Anyway, the Robot Torture Master is not in here. But the guitars in this clip are up for deletion. If you think they're not relevant to the track, please let me know, and give me some critiques, because this is a genre I haven't worked in very much, like the really heavy dark synth, and I really love it. It's my favorite genre to listen to in synthwave, but it's a lot harder to produce than, you know, it sounds, to be honest. So hit me with some brutal feedback. I do enjoy getting a little bit of gut punches every once in a while, and Russell's really good for that, but he's not here, so you guys have to settle in for that. Sub in, if you will.
Okay, here we go then. So shout out to those evil robot overlords. I love that story. I love the fact that Sub Neon is also moonlighting as a robot overlord as well. which is great.
Moonlighting.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tim.
I think he's part machine.
Yeah. From the cupboard. Here we go. Okay, this is I think this is where the limitation of the Riverside platform comes in, and
right?
The audio it's different to the one that you submitted to me, because my thoughts are, coming from the metal background and being a metal guitarist, is I'd want more sort of like meat on those.
Yeah, where the hell are the guitars? But it's just being all cut off at about 400 hertz.
Yeah, it sounds like, if I was going to liken it to a guitar tone, it reminds me of Pantera, like Dimebag Darrell's guitar tone.
I'm from Texas, man. That's a compliment.
Yeah. Scoop Med. Oh, mate, I love Pantera. I've been watching the live stuff recently, yeah. And it's great to see him back on stage, albeit without the two brothers. But yeah, I would want more meat on those guitars. More like, I really want them to, I don't know how I could describe it, just when they're chugging, I want them to chug.
So you want more guitar, not kill the guitars, but make the guitars bigger in the mix.
Not necessarily bigger. It's the sound itself, because as you say, it sounds like they've been top and tailed, and then you've lost a lot of that low end chug. But you've got to be careful there, because you've got a lot of bass going on as well.
Do I ever?
So yeah, you've got to marry. You've got to weigh up. Okay, if those guitars are going to extend into those low mids, then they're going to compete with that bass that I've got going on. So you've got to weigh up the two. But definitely keep the guitars in, though, man. I'm with the guitars in this, but I just think they need the sound sculpting needs to.
Oh, for sure. I'm absolutely terrible at mixing guitars, I've found.
No, it's quite an art. It's quite
sure
tricky.
Is.
But leave them in, man.
I felt like when the higher stuff came in, the melody sort of, there was a sort of melody that came in there. I felt like in the mix, I wanted to hear that more, get a bit more detail of what was going on. That, I mean, it may be this audio listening across here, but I couldn't hear the melody very clearly. But I loved the sort of chug and the vibe with the drums as well. I thought like they were hitting the mark, and you know, it had a good energy, all of the groove.
There's power in those drums. You've got power in those drums. When that snare and that kick drum combine.
Yeah, that's true. I usually hate the combo of my snare and kick, but this one I actually like it. It sounds pretty good. Mm.
I think they hit really well. I think they punch very well.
I love that sound. It's very much like Midnight Danger meets Perturbator.
I like that combo. All right, sign me up for that.
Hard, man. Hard, that's real good.
That's one of the reasons I made a follow-up EP, is because there's a bunch of material I made for the Shredwave EP that was just too heavy, because I realized halfway through making the EP, like, Shredwave is not necessarily the darkest music in synthwave, it's just shreddy, and I want to go dark. I want, like, the intro of this track is a solid minute 15 seconds of torture screams and robot, like, bzz, bzz. It's, there's a lot of sound design in there, like, it's pretty intense. sorry, Subdion. What have you signed up for?
Yeah, I did not provide the screaming.
He did not. But if you want to add to it, get another layer in there, by all means. Just channel that like post meeting anger and just get it on the mic.
I was thinking for a bit. I love the darkness and the grit of the tune. Have you thought about incorporating like machine sounds into the beat, like a robot walking, like
Servo
a chugging
motors.
Factory type of?
You know what's
that's
funny?
A great idea.
That, it's so weird because
like Fear Factory style.
Yes, all the stuff, all the mechanical Foley sounds disappear right before the clip starts. And then Subneon's killer voiceover starts right as the clip ends. So I managed to find the least interesting part of the track and send it to you guys.
I was going
to
say that. I think you've sent like it's a great part, but I think you could have sent us either the Subneon bit or the atonal sound bit with those found sounds, because if you get like those Fear Factory like style sounds in there of mechanical shit going on, that would sound wicked.
I think I might actually layer in some of that stuff, because like you said, some of the like the low mids are feeling a little muddled and maybe having a little bit of clanky stuff going on there. Might introduce a little bit of variety to it. And the reason I sent this bit of the track is because this is the part I'm least confident about. It feels more generic dark synth and less, you know, Robot Torture screamy soundscape / Robot Torture master voiceover, which I'm very confident about. So I sent the bit I wanted the feedback on. The rest of that shit, you can't touch. I'm keeping it.
I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows the track Reptile by Nine Inch Nails.
Yes. But
it very much plays to what Tota was saying around like servo motors and mechanical, but it also captures what Mark was saying about that chunk, 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 you know, that crunch, you know, it's crunchy and it's playing to the guitars, but it's got the industrial sound. I think Reptile's probably the ideal reference track for this.
That's a good call. I gotta go back to that. I haven't listened to that song in ages. And I bought a Foley pack of mechanical servo motors and clanks and clinks and stuff like that specifically for this track, and it's all in the intro. So I'm just going to bring some of that into the main verse part then. That's a really good bit of advice. I'm going to try that immediately.
Oh, okay. Just rhythmically as well. It's also on the and the bass is in the same, the shredding is in the same vibe, and the synthesizer that's kind of falling in an arpy kind of way is in the same rhythm. And with that stability like laying down the groundwork, it gets very Factory-ish, and I'm thinking you could add a Subneon type little rhythm switch up at the end of a bar if you wanted to give that more dynamic. If this period in particular, just towards the end of a loop or something, cut out something and bring it back in, because that rhythm is so steady. We all get into the machine of it all, like we know where we're going with that beat, and that's the charm. But that also gives us a superpower note to take it away and we'll completely fucking
that's
be
a really
baffled
good idea.
By it.
I like that a lot.
I know you can't do it with this song, but I think if you're going down a dark route and you're going into this like really mechanical soundscape and stuff, is like when you get the guitarist in, maybe consider dropping the tuning. I think if you were to think about like my old band, we used to play in drop B. I'm not saying go drop B because that was heavy as piss, but maybe like maybe drop B. I think drop B on that would sound so heavy, man. But maybe consider tunings on the next ones as well, on the next track, and think, because I don't know what tuning that's in, but it sounds like it's going to be in standard. I could be wrong.
It's actually a 9-string guitar. I'm just not using bottom 2 strings. It's in drop C sharp.
Oh, I was way out then. It's 9-string guitar.
It's a 9-string guitar. It's not a real guitar. It's not a real guitar.
It's like a bloody keyboard.
It is a really good VST called Ample Metal Hellraiser. And I just got kind of good at programming it to sound pretty realistic, and it has a lot of articulation tools to kind of give you that realistic vibe, as long as you don't get too far away from the chuggy stuff.
Does a pretty good vibe. I mean, it sounds like
That was the goal.
It's really impressive.
So I can absolutely change the tuning easily, and at some point in this follow-up EP, I want to do a full-on Mick Gordon track, just like full-on Doom's 2016 soundtrack vibe, and I keep almost getting there and then too far and taking it back. So one of these days I'm just gonna let it rip. But for this track, like you said, that Factory vibe was that kind of something I was going for, but I think I might have hit it a little too on the nose. So like dialing it back a bit and mixing up some of those rhythmic switches and adding a bit more clanky Foley in there might be a good idea. Solid feedback, you guys, thanks so much.
Nice, man. I was going to say, if you're ever in the need of, if you want like dropped guitar, like just riffs, give me a shout, man. I'm sure. I don't know what tunings my guitars are in. I've got 2 Jackson DKMGs with 8185 pickups, and they're pure
metal.
Have
you not seen my Instagram post? It's the summer of shred. Come on, man. Just send me some riffs.
I probably have, to be fair. It's just
my the summer apologies. Is nowhere near over, sir. Let us just send me some riffs, send me some shreds. I'll send you a track, shred
let
over
me,
it.
Shredding's that I'll put my hand up and say shredding's not my forte, but if you want rhythm, like rhythm guitar,
hey, you know, big knives rhythm, cut too. You know, I'm on some deep chart, chunky shreds too. It doesn't all have to be way up all on the fretboard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll see what we can do, mate. No, that sounds great. I'd love to play some metal. I haven't played
hell yes.
Years.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. Fantastic. I hope that was useful. Folks, I was going to say gents there, but alienating talks. This has been great. I've loved this episode. We've gone off on proper tangents, talking about wolves, seagulls, music. It's been great. I'm just going to go over to YouTube. There's no one there. Facebook, there's no one there either. So there we go. What we'll do is we'll go round. We've had four people on YouTube. And you can just highlight where the audience can find you. And if you've got any key dates or anything coming up, just shout that out, because this episode will go live. It's the 2nd of July today, and it's going to go live a week on Tuesday. So I'm going to go around. We go from the first one. So Neon Highway, where can we find you? Any key dates?
Just at Neon Highway Synth or on Instagram, and there's a link tree for everything. New track just came out, and that's about the last thing that I've got in the calendar at the moment. But it seems to be getting good feedback, so go have a listen.
Fantastic. And Tota?
Yeah, I'm at Tota's Voice on Instagram. Otherwise, any of your streaming platforms as just Tota. And if you happen to be listening from Sweden, why are we laughing at my name now? Am I saying it's spicy too?
I think it's because I've been pronouncing it wrong. I think that might be what it is. Martin,
mm-hmm. Yeah. She thought you were Finnish. Who thought you were Finnish?
Well, Swedish. Oh, same
don't say that to any Finnish people. Oh my god.
I feel like with this this fringe I've got going on, I'm basically Finnish.
I thought you were. Because the pronunciation, like I'm Swedish, I'm Finnish from Jonna, and if I was from Texas, I'd be saying Jonna. Anyway.
Yeah. No. Well. I was just saying, I have a gig coming up 29th Ooh. Of July, so if you happen to be in Malmö, come catch us. We'll be playing the recent singles as well as a lot from the album.
Fantastic. And Isle 9.
Yeah, Isle 9. Well, you can find me at Isle 9 Music on Instagram, and there's a link tree there for absolutely everything else. But you'll find me on pretty much every social media thing at R9 Music. Yeah, and you can come buy a nice t-shirt. There we go. I'm going to sort of have a new single out. I've just had Eternal Overdrive out, and I've got a single out that I've sort of worked on for Just Scott recently, and I've got a new one of mine that I'm going to sort of get out in the next few weeks, which I think is going to be called Worlds Away, and that's going to be another instrumental one. And then I've got a gig coming up at Duskwaves in London, but it's miles away. But like, just to warn you, in October, which is going to be very cool, I think, with some other awesome retro musicians. So that's going to be really good. And yeah, there's just going to be lots more music, I think. I'm hoping so.
Cheers. Fantastic. Lovely stuff. I'm looking forward to that gig. In the same month, I'm watching Blaze Bailey and Isle 9. Doesn't get much better than that. Blaze Bailey of X.
It doesn't, does it, really?
And then Isle 9. Not the same gig, although that would be really good. I'd love to see Blaze Bailey and you team up, but there we go. Fantastic. And then Sub Neon.
I can never remember what my socials are, so that's why I've shoved them all on a website. So you can find me at subneon.net. My next single, called Thunderheart, is coming out on the 28th of July, as mastered by Tim over there. He's done a fantastic job as always, and it's coming out on Retro Synth Records, my first release on the label. So,
yeah, on Retro Synth. Whoa,
lovely stuff. Excellent. And Pashang.
So, I just released a couple days ago my debut single from the Summer of Shred main thing, the Resistance EP, and the track is called Lockdown, features Demi K on guitars, and it's performing pretty well so far. It's out on streaming and Bandcamp. Please go buy Demi K a coffee vicariously through me at pashang.bandcamp.com. I'm on Instagram as Pishong Audio, and you can find me all over the place. My next track is called GGFO, featuring the uncanny master of shreds and also mastering engineer for the album, Ran, and that'll be coming out middle of July. And then from there, the full album will follow, and the follow-up album after that. So there's quite a lot of stuff going on this year. Hope you guys stick around to catch it.
Fantastic. Folks, I will put all those links in the episode description. And before we sign off, for those listening / watching, if you would like to join us on an episode of the Producers Pub, do head over to insidethemixpodcast.podia.com and get signed up for an episode of the Producers Pub. Alternatively, you can head over to Instagram and click the link in the bio and join us as we have done today. The next one is going to be on the 30th of July, and then we're taking a slight break, and then we're coming back in September, October and November with some more episodes. So folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, and I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll do it all again soon. Whoa! Before you go, make sure to snag your free test master from Synth Music Mastering. Imagine enhancing your music with my steadfast dedication to quality and that personalized touch. And here's the kicker, it's absolutely free, no cost at all. Simply head over to synthmusicmastering.com or click the link in the episode description to claim your free test master.